Welcome to Distance to Empty's first bonus episode. We're excited to bring some bonus content here for you guys. I'm your host, Kevin Goldberg, and I'm here with my trusty sidekick, Peter Noyes. Peter, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Kevin. I think this whole work thing I was working on is finally coming to an end. So excited to be past that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Fingers crossed that things remain more stable for you in your work life so that you can get some sleep and do normal people things.
I can't wait for that.
So today's bonus episode is with a good friend of ours and a legend in the 200 and multi-day scene. The reason it's a bonus episode is because we wanted to bring sort of a cool, like, hybrid episode for like giveaway contest thing for people. So our guest today is Helgi Olafsson. Helgi has done more 200 milers than most. I think he's got the 6 most finishes of any person in the world. Helgi is also the founder and owner of EcoPath Endurance. They create some really cool events, and Helgi is giving away a free entry into his new Vision Capture the Flags Ultra. So there is going to be a sort of a secret code word at the end of the episode to listen to enter that contest or get bonus entries in that contest. So yeah, let's get to it. And here's our chat with Helgi Olafsson. Helgi, welcome to Distance to Empty. Thanks for being here.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good. We're stoked to chat. Before we get into it, I kind of just want to put you on the spot here and have you actually list the 200s that you've done. There's not many people who have done as many 200s as you. I think you're the 6th most 200-mile finishes in the world, which is pretty remarkable. So is that number at 14 right now? And if so, can you list them or is it too fuzzy?
I think that I have enough memory from each of them ingrained in my brain that I can list them pretty well. So my first 200 was Moab 240 2017. And then after that was the Triple Crown in 2018. So Bigfoot was in the beginning at that stage. And then Tahoe, then Moab. And then 2019, I did the Tahoe 200 when it was still going around the lake. But the first Tahoe 200 of the first Triple Crown that I did was the 5-year anniversary. So we went around the lake in the counterclockwise direction. No, we went around the lake in the clockwise direction that year. This is hard, actually. then 2020 was COVID, but Moab 240 was still happening with extra precautions in place. And ever since I finished the first Triple Crown in 2018, I wanted to go back. I just wanted to make a bigger project out of it. So I cycled in between the races. Originally was going to run between the races, but so that was the second Triple Crown in 2021 that also included 2100 miles of cycling in 61 days. And then in 2022 was Cocodona 250, which was my only Cocodona 250 that I've done. And then 2023, which was last year, I did my third Triple Crown of 200. So then it was Tahoe first, Bigfoot, and then Moab. And other than that, I've done a lot of adventures that are above the 200-mile mark, but no sanctioned races.
Wow, that's a lot of races, and I'm glad you stumbled on the Tahoe. I was hoping it was going to be like challenging as you actually went through and listed them, because I have trouble thinking back on my own and have done considerably less than you.
Wow, that's an amazing set of adventures. 14 200s, and I didn't even realize you had all these biking adventures, between some of those. So Can you talk to us a little bit about your journey to those, especially in light of you battling ankylosing spondylitis and how that affected your journey along the way?
Sure. I've had the pleasure of listening to, you know, a few of your guys' episodes so far. And I've noticed that there's a lot of folks who start with triathlon. And I also did the same thing. I will say, though, that when I was younger, I lost my license for 10 years because of like a DUI. And then I continued driving, got suspended license tickets. And anyway, long story short, lost the license and I had to still get around. So I biked everywhere or took the bus or walked or whatever. So that really helped me learn that I can go anywhere. It just takes a little bit longer, you know, and human power is something that you don't need anything else except for your own will to move forward to do. So I kind of had that mentality going into it. And I did have, I was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis when I was 19 years old. Had quite a bit of pain just getting out of bed in the morning or bending over, any just weird, just normal movements really hurt. Like a bone on bone sharp pain feeling. And we didn't know what it was, my mom and I. So she took me on a diagnosis hunt. And about 6 months later, we had the diagnosis of ankylosing spondylitis. And it was pretty tough to, you know, hear that because I was doing research on the disease a little bit. And I saw that there were some folks who really were incapacitated, couldn't do normal things. But my rheumatologist was very supportive and he had patients who were my age and were doing things like surfing and cycling and basically living normal lives. The bottom line was that you just had to stay moving. So, you know, that gave me the strength that I needed. I didn't really take it seriously for another 7 or 8 years, but then moved to Hawaii where the Ironman World Championships are on the Big Island. I had the opportunity to join a relay team for Lavaman Waikoloa, which is an Olympic distance try. And I was the runner for the relay team, so I got to cross the finish line. I was the one who got to, you know, feel the vibes of all the people. And it was just a really awesome feeling for me. So after that race, I kind of made it a pact to myself that I was going to do an Ironman in a year. And in order to do an Ironman, I needed to do a marathon. So I was also going to do that. And I was going to hire a coach and, you know, buy a bike and swim and do all these things. And alongside that, to raise awareness for ankylosing spondylitis, to show people what's possible. And it just became kind of a quest from that point forward to achieve these things that I would set out to do, these goals that I would make for myself. And I knocked every single one of them off. So,
yeah, I think that's, I mean, one thing that I'm really fascinated by with you, Helgi, is, you know, you've done 14 of these 200 plus mile races and you haven't DNF'd a single one of them, which I think is truly remarkable. You think, you see, generally speaking, you know, the more ultras people do eventually, you know, I think the why inherently gets a little weaker along the way, right? Like the more things we do, it's less of a bucket list challenge. It's less of a once in a lifetime thing, more of a lifestyle. So mentally it becomes, I don't know if I want to say more challenging, but it becomes different, right? To complete these things because your why is shifting and your reason for doing these things might be shifting. So I'm fascinated by, you know, we now understand your physical motivation to do these to an extent, you know, it's to help manage your AS and it's become your lifestyle. But how do you mentally prepare for these races and how have you been so successful in completing all of them? You know, what do you do when things get really hard and when you want to quit?
Yeah. I think that my first 200 was a big turning point for me. You know, and I can look back on the exact moment when that happened. you know, I've been on a few other podcasts and talked about my chafe issues in my first Moab 240. I think they write something in the runner's manual about not shaving your balls before a race. But basically, I was like at my wit's end with it. And after trying everything, I just didn't know what I was going to do to move forward, you know. There was plastic bags involved and like all kinds of things. Anyways, I'm in the middle of the section between Pol Canyon and Uwa Lake, it was that year, and in the LaSalle's, and it was the daytime. I was looking up and I remember there were a lot of leaves on the ground. I mean, there's some big aspens shedding leaves at that time. And people were passing me. I was kind of just sitting there on a tree log, like, what the hell am I going to do? It's 10 miles back to Pol Canyon. It's 10 miles to Uwa Lake. And then, like, I get service, and I called one of my running mentors, a guy who also has AS. His name's Scott Martin. He just did his first 200 at Oregon 200, doing really well. I'm excited to see where he goes. Anyway, I called him. I'm like, what do I do? And he just goes, keep going. And it just was like something that I'm like, this guy is absolutely right. So when I like realized that I had the power to shift my mentality about something just because of like a little self-talk that I had, or maybe, you know, somebody else shed some light on a subject for me. I was like, wow, the possibilities are really endless of what you can do. And yeah, it's, you know, even in, toward the end of a 200 for me, when things are going kind of like, I don't know if I can make it, but then you finally get to that spot, and every race has that spot where it's all downhill from here, you know? And then all of a sudden you're running 10 minute miles. So, you know, just anything is possible. I feel like the wins, especially because they keep happening for me. Luckily, I mean, you know, I haven't broken my leg in a race, so I haven't quit, but I've wanted to quit many times. And it's every time that I don't quit that makes it easier for me to always decide to move forward.
Yeah. Well, chafing issues are no joke. I mean, that can be painful. I've had issues. So did Candace write that rule because of you, or you just remember the rule?
It wasn't in the runner's manual in the first year I did it. It came in the next year.
Okay. So it might be because of you. So it sounds like, you know, you had this revelation in your first Moab that really, you know, got you into the mindset of never giving up. You can now always, you know, finish these things, bar a broken leg. I guess any other standout races in those 14 where you had other types of revelations or just anything of note that really stands out?
You know, when I'm specifically like preparing for a race, I really like to visualize the experiences that I've had in the past and draw energy from those, but also think about how maybe I could have done those better. And then because I've done a lot of these races multiple times, I can actually envision myself in the place in the race and how things are going to go. And, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, but I believe in the power of like manifesting situations for sure. But I'll actually say one thing. My brother, he told me this thing the other week. It was, you can be lucky and that's just like happenstance luck. But then there's situational luck, which is really what most people are talking about when they say you're lucky. But situational luck is the intersection of preparedness and opportunity.
Right. You put yourself in the situation where luck is most likely to thrive or present itself. Yeah. Love it.
So maybe switching things up a little bit. So sounds like you've had a pretty wild career. Can you explain a bit about what you do for a living?
Sure. So I work as a super yacht chef. I'm lucky to have had the opportunity, and I say lucky because of the situational luck that I'm talking about. I answered an ad on Craigslist many years ago. It was for a charter yacht chef for the summer up in Alaska on a wooden fantail yacht built in 1931. So I was like, wow, this is a great opportunity. Spent 2 hours writing a nice email. And a week later, I was up on this wooden yacht, hitting my head on the chandelier when I walked in to do my interview. And it was like pretty bare bones household kitchen in the galley rather than what I'm used to now, which is this kind of deal right here. And it put me in like the last frontier, like just up in the Inside Passage of Southeast Alaska. I was 3 feet away. Our hull was 3 feet away from that of a sleeping humpback whale. I've seen a killer whale placenta. Basically, a killer whale had just been born a pup. I've seen killer whales, or they call them orca, teach their young how to hunt by, flopping a seal around and doing that. I've seen grizzly bear fights, attacks, eagle, there's so many things in Alaska. I recommend everybody go up there. Plus, I had the opportunity to come into port looking at some mountain and thinking to myself, oh, well, maybe I have some time to go up there later. And I would get to actually go up there and experience the mountains in Alaska. So that was fun, and it got me into yachting, but it really I wanted to see if I could make some more money, so I got more into super yachting. And I've been doing it since 2011. Now I have a pretty awesome opportunity where I am working rotationally, and so I work 10 weeks and then I'm off 10 weeks. And I'm paid for the entire time. If something were to happen, I would probably have to cancel my plans and go back to work, which is one of the, drawbacks. But having the time off to do adventures and plan for like my exit from yachting is super convenient for me, and it's really given me the opportunity to develop my business, which is EcoPath Endurance.
So, I want to get into what EcoPath Endurance is and kind of what you do over there. So, can you just kind of briefly explain what EcoPath is and what its goals are?
Sure. Basically, I have done some just research, I guess, over the years, and just meeting people and trying to find common adventures that are kind of more a smaller group size, community based, where people work together. And that's one of the things that I've found in the 200s is when I join up with someone who's at a similar pace, for instance, and my crew gets to, mingle with their crew at multiple aid stations. There's really this family thing that starts to happen. And I wanted to create something that would offer those experiences, maybe to folks who weren't ready to do a 200 and wanted to do something that could give them a taste of how that is. And smaller races, in my opinion, don't have it as much. They're more based on speed and just getting to the finish line. But there are a few different things that have come out recently that are pretty awesome and involve more of a team environment. I would say that the kind of one of the original pioneers of that would be the Ragnar Relay series and the OCRs and the mud runs and things like that, where people are having fun while they're doing a 5K, for instance, and doing 27 obstacles. It's different for everybody, but basically, the one that I'm really modeling it after is this 29029, which is called Eversting. And the concept basically is they go to a location, usually at a ski resort that has a gondola to bring people down, and people go and do summits until they get enough elevation to say that they've summited Everest. On their final summit, they get a red jersey. So the people that are coming down on the gondola can see the person going up on the with the red jersey. They all cheer each other on. They get a brand on a board with their next to their name every summit they do. And it's just this really like fun gamified experience where people get to work together, but also individually. So with EcoPath Endurance, one of the items that we've created is a new format, a timed format called Capture the Flags. You go and get the flag and bring it back to the central transition area, which would be similar in like a backyard format of like the interloopal area where runners can get aid and get ready to go back out for another loop. Central location, 7 routes, and each one of these routes is represented by a color, which is the flag that you would get, but also an NFC key fob. And they attach to the runner's chest strap, and therefore you can see what flag someone's going for. But not only is it that you get the flag, that's how runners prove that they've done the route. They have to bring the flag back to transition, but they've got to clock in and out with the NFC key fob. So this is what times their exact time on course. And they can choose the route that they want to take. They don't have to do it in a certain order, which is how a lot of these races that do use this format, they have to do it in a specific order in order to time it properly. But because we're using the NFC timing chips, if they just have to use the specific chip to time in and out of that route, go and get the flag. And then the flag is also worth points that go to the team score. Which there's a scoreboard in the middle of the transition area, kind of like the wooden branding board where everybody can see what's going on. Another part of the format is that there are 7 first flag bonuses. So the reason why I created these was to create mini races within the big race. The fast runners will go for the first flag. But it's not necessarily the runner who gets to the flag first. It's the runner who brings the flag back to the base first. And that could be the second or third person that gets the flag. So there's a lot of strategy involved in this game. And because runners might not think that they can go against another runner, they would choose a different route so that they could get that first flag instead. So it's going to be fun to see how it all pans out. This first version is June 29th at Grandfather Mountain State Park in North Carolina, just outside of Boone. And we're really excited to bring it out there and see if we can pull this off.
Absolutely.
So another thing that you do with EcoPath is put on the Mighty Gallatin 350, I think it is. So talk to us about what Mighty Gallatin is. I think it's coming up on its third iteration. So let's dive into Mighty Gallatin a bit. What is Mighty Gallatin?
So Mighty Gallatin originally started out as a 350. Now it is 280 this year. We did 302 last year, and we still have yet to get a finisher. It's very hard. It's in the Montana Rockies in the Gallatin National Forest, Lee Metcalf Wilderness Area. The Highlight Porcupine Buffalo Horn Wilderness Study Area, which is basically the Gallatin Range that flanks the Yellowstone River. And then, you know, the Gallatin River goes up to the Madison Range. So those two mountain ranges in Montana, in and around Big Sky, Montana. It's some of the most beautiful scenery, mountain scenery that I've ever experienced. And
right. So if you're curious about Mighty Gallatin or Capture the Flags Ultra, you can learn more about those at ecopathendurance.com. Helgi, before we wrap up here with our normal you know, quick five questions that we like to ask everyone. I wanted to give you the opportunity to do a course corner. So we, you know, one of our categories that we sometimes do is, you know, Peter or I will ask each other about a specific course in one of the 200s that we've done, and the other has to kind of go through that course section and just kind of talk about it, explain, you know, any memories they have on that section. So I'm going to throw one at you here. And it's actually the section, I believe this is the section where we met for the first time in 2018. So I want you to tell us about the section at Bigfoot 200 from Windy Ridge to Coldwater, passing through Johnson Observatory. So I think that's about a 12, 14 mile section if you combine those two. So what's your take on that section? What do you remember from it?
Well, they actually last year they had a mudslide, which caused the race to not have an aid station at Johnson Ridge Observatory. And I don't know if they're going to bring it back either, but so are we talking about having the aid station there or not having the aid station there?
Dealer's choice. You choose.
I liked it when the aid station was there, because both times that I went through there, I had random buddies show up to cheer me on. So that was really fun and uplifting. This year, it was tough. It's kind of a barren section for the first bit. It's almost as if you're, you know, running through an oasis, because there are like a few water crossings, but it's so dry. And it makes it feel like I'm in the desert, even though you're in the forest of, you know, Washington. And I do believe that that has a lot to do with the eruption, just cause it, you know, wiped everything out. But then, you know, you kind of go down to the creek, I believe that comes out of Spirit Lake. I'm not exactly sure, but then you go up to the observatory and there's some paved paths. And once you cross over the observatory is when it really gets fun, because if you have running legs, which, I mean, most people still have running legs at that point, you can run all the way down to the Coldwater Lake aid station. This year specifically, you know, after coming in last at Tahoe 200, I say this year, but I mean 2023, last year. So yeah, I was moving really good in that part of the race coming into Coldwater, and I was thinking to myself, you know, if I can gain 4 hours on where I thought I would be, then I'm going to sleep for 4 hours. So I was able to earn an extra 4 hours of sleep that I didn't even plan for. And that really, really set me up for success in that race, is gaining that extra confidence boost of like, okay, well, now there's this dangling carrot that I just got, and I got all this extra sleep. So I feel like I just set myself up for a good race. All the things that happen in these 200s, in my opinion, are just like a multiplication of what happens on day one. It depends on how day one goes. If day one goes well, then most likely the rest of the race is going to go well for you.
Nice. Well, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that we like to wrap things up by doing a quick rapid fire five questions. So we're going to ask you five questions. Just think about what pops into your head right away. It doesn't have to be the perfect answer. Just looking for what pops in your head. So to start, what's your highest high been in a 200?
That would be Moab 240 2018, when I was finishing my first Triple Crown. Going down Porcupine Rim specifically.
Yeah, I remember that for me too. Like, just knowing that the Triple Crown was going to be a success at that point. All right, flip side, what about lowest low in a 200?
I'll definitely go back to the instance where I had the stick in my mouth, you know, didn't know which way to go.
All right. Favorite food for a 200?
I would say, condiment, mayonnaise for sure. I'm the mayo guy. I want mayonnaise to lube up my food. I hate dry food. So a burger with cheese and mayonnaise.
Favorite piece of gear for a 200.
Right here. Tracking poles. 100%. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've stopped myself from falling over just because I've had an extra balance point. Yeah, they break sometimes, you know, but they pay dividends. I recommend trekking poles for sure. Definitely not having them on all the time, but having them on you for sure.
Okay. And last question. You know the answer. We already know the answer. It's the theme of this podcast, but we have to ask it. Have you found your distance to empty yet?
I don't think that people can find their distance to empty. I think that even if they think that they do, they're probably wrong because it's just not what we are. It's not in our fabric as human beings.
I love it. Couldn't agree more. All right, Helgi. Thank you so much for joining us. What is the secret word that people are listening for to prove that they ticked off this box for the contest for the Capture the Flag Ultra?
Red flag.
Red flag. All right. That's the code word is red flag. Helgi, thank you so much for joining us. That was a blast.
All right, guys.
Well, there you have it, our first bonus episode ever. We're pretty excited to see how the Capture the Flag Ultra plays out. So if any of our listeners enter the contest and end up running it, you'll have to let us know how it is. Hope to bring some more bonus content out here in the future. Thank you for listening. Reminder, like, subscribe, do all the things that help us grow the podcast, and we'll catch you again on Monday for our normal weekly episode.